This is Mandy.
And this is Leanne.
And you're listening to Two Blind Sleuths.
This is episode 19.
We're getting close to the big 20. Okay. So, I'm going to tell a true crime story tonight.
Unsolved. Or do we not get to know until the end?
It's solved.
Okay.
It's solved. There's still definitely some lingering big question marks, but it is pretty much solved. So, we had a listener from Australia write in and request this case. Because we're big in Australia now.
Yes, I know. So you tell me. Like, that's our biggest listening.
Well, besides America, yeah. It is. But that we probably owe that to the Lady Vanishes podcast. Yes. Because we did the episode on Marion Barter, which was an Australian case. And they shared our episode. And
it was so nice.
It was very nice. And we really appreciate it. So this case was written in from our listener in Australia, Annette.
Okay.
So thank you, Annette, for bringing this case to my attention, or our attention, but I just kind of took the email and
rolled with it.
Yeah, rolled with it. So this is the disappearance of Sarah Spears. This is a very interesting case, so buckle up.
Settle in.
Settle in. It's about to get crazy.
I'm excited.
Okay, and yeah, and I don't think you know about this case. So.
I've never heard of Sarah Spears in my life.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if you will. But in 1996, Sarah was 18 years old. She had recently graduated from high school. She was a sweet girl who had lots of friends. She was working as a secretary and sharing a flat, which I assume is like an apartment here, with her sister in southern Perth. That is in Australia. Sarah went out with friends the night of January 26, 1996. They were going out to celebrate Australia Day.
Okay.
Those of you who do not know what Australia Day is, I didn't. Of course, I had to Google it. It's a national holiday that they celebrate every year in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And celebrates the date of landing of the first fleet in Port Jackson in 1788.
Oh, okay.
So I assume that's founding of Australia. Does that sound right?
Kind of like Columbus.
Yeah, but in Australia. Yeah. I guess that's when they first came into port and
said, hey, we're here and we're going to set up shop.
Yeah, this is going to be Australia. So that night, on January 26, 1996, Sarah and her friends went out in a wealthy suburb of Claremont in Perth. Mm-hmm. It's a popular spot for young people. It has bars and restaurants and kind of a nightlife. So, that night, Sarah's sister dropped her and her friends off.
Mm-hmm.
Since, they lived together, she would do that sometimes. The friends and her went to a few different places, and they ended up at a place called Club View.
Mm-hmm.
So it was late. I guess they hung out, partied. I think it was about 2 a.m. Sarah was ready to go home. So she told her friends, I'm really tired. They said she wasn't drunk or anything. She just said, I'm ready to go. Her friends tried to urge her to stay, we'll be ready soon. But she was like, no. They said before they knew it, she was gone. So she left there at 2 a.m. And at 2:06, right outside of the place that they were in, she called a taxi from a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said to the taxi, because they have that on record, that she wanted to go to a local park, not home. And I assume that's just because the park was close to her house and she would save money because she could just walk the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's weird, but okay.
Yeah, right. But that's just where she didn't ask to go just specifically to her address. Mm-hmm. She just said that the park. That's what I assumed happened, but that's the theory. She told them she'd be waiting between these two streets. So when the cab arrived exactly 8 minutes later, Sarah was not there. So she had vanished. The disappearance was the start of one of Australia's longest-running serial killing investigations. When Sarah's sister realized the next day she never came home, she started calling her friends, and they were calling each other trying to find her. And they didn't know if she had gone home with somebody, gone to somebody's house. So when Sarah did not show up at her secretary job on Monday, that's when everybody was like, something serious, something bad has happened to Sarah. She wouldn't not show up. So her parents called the police that day, and the search started. Lots of her friends and family started handing out flyers in the Claremont area, asking if anyone had seen Sarah. They knocked on doors. The taxi drivers in the area were questioned. There were little leads in the Club View. That was the name of the place she was last seen. They put up a $10,000 reward for information. Yeah. Paul Ferguson, that is now retired from the police there said it was like she vanished into thin air. I did find two reports that were sort of interesting. One person had reported hearing screams around that time that Sarah was supposed to be picked up on that.
Is it like a high prone area or is not?
Not at all.
Does she have a boyfriend?
I don't think she had a boyfriend, but let me get to the rest of it. It's not just, this case is about Sarah, but there's so much more. This case of Sarah Spears was the beginning of the Claremont serial killer. So one person had reported they heard screams, and when he called it in, they said that there had been a couple other people that had heard screams. And he went to the balcony, and he spotted the balcony of his flat, and he spotted a light-colored station wagon on the wrong side of the road with headlights that were turned on, and he heard two doors slam, and it drove away. And he was a mechanic, the guy that spotted the car from his balcony, and he thought the car was a Toyota Corona.
I think it's a Corolla.
No, that's a different car.
Oh, yeah.
Because of how the tail lights were curved, because he could only see really the lights. I guess he could only see it was a light color. He couldn't tell what exactly the car was.
Yeah.
But that was the only tip, and there really wasn't much to go on. That was it for at least, that was in January. So on June 9th, 1996, Jane Rammer, 23, is last seen outside the Claremont's Continental Hotel. And then on August 3rd, 1996, her body is found in the bushland at Willerford and Perth South. So it's like on the side of the town, Perth, and the south side. They found her body in the, I would seem like woods. When they say brush, I think they mean, bushland. I think they mean like
in the woods.
Yeah, but our version of the woods. I didn't go into details because this case is about Sarah. So if you want to know more details about the other crimes that were committed, you can Google them, because there's a little bit more of a resolution for these other cases.
Her body has not been found. She isn't found, period.
Not at all. And so Jane, you know, that she was last seen in the Claremont area. So this is what's leading up to what will be a Claremont killer on the loose.
Later.
That was Sierra Glennon, 27, is last seen in the Claremont area after visiting the Claremont Hotel. Her body is found in bushland at Eggleton, if I said that, in Perth.
North side.
No, sorry. Okay. So on the whole other side of town, her body was found.
Okay.
So obviously, there's a serial killer
in this area.
And in the 15-month span, not only did these girls, you know, this all happened within 15 months, they all go missing. Okay. And their age range from Sarah was 18 to 27, but they all kind of looked the same. They had similar hair color, features, things like that. And these crimes were sexually motivated. For sure. I mean, of course, they figured that out.
Yeah.
It goes cold.
But they had nothing to go on.
They had nothing to go on.
DNA.
And DNA was just starting at this time. In the 90s, it still wasn't great.
Right.
They definitely kept everything. So at least they had evidence, though, from these two
other girls. They didn't know how to use it yet.
They didn't quite know how to use it. They saved it. So, of course, you know, DNA has advanced 19 years later. Mm-hmm. There's a cold case unit, once again, working the case. So there was a stain... Kimono.
Yeah.
That was taken into evidence.
Similar to what you're wearing right now.
I know. I was actually thought about it today when I put it on. I'm not kidding. Because I had done this story. And so I was thinking about it. I was like, it's kind of like what this. And you said, you just pointed it out. So I didn't have to. So that was taken into evidence from that piece of clothing. Was taken into evidence from a totally different crime from 1998, where this attacker broke into someone's house, attacked the 18-year-old girl that was sleeping, and he was wearing a woman's nightie, and then flees after a struggle. Behind, he leaves the stained garment that had semen on it. Okay.
His nightie?
So, yeah, I mean, that was just a weird case that had happened in 1988. They kept the garment.
88? Oh, okay.
So, have nothing to go on. They do not know who the Claremont killer is, right? So, other sexually... you know, motivated cases, they start to look in and say, is there any connection? And they do have...
And they'd run across this nightie that
they knew that they had this, he had left. So, okay, they have this, right? So DNA has 19 years, it has come a long way. That is something that they knew they have. And it's all in the same area. It's not necessarily in Claremont. I think it's a little outside where the 1988...
But close enough.
Yes, where that had happened. And then in 1995, there was a 17-year-old girl who was abducted and raped. And she survived, but that was also in the Claremont area. I just mentioned that, and I'll go back to that. So
easy.
Huh?
It'd be fearful.
I know, to going back and forth. So they took the DNA evidence from the 90 that they found, and they got the DNA. They had found some DNA under Sierra Glennon's fingernails, because remember, they found her body.
Right. Okay?
So they just...
Was she the second or the third one? Sorry.
So she was the third. So there was some DNA evidence. Like I said, they didn't really know much about DNA back then, 1997.
They were using what they knew.
Okay, so they matched the 90 and the DNA under Sierra Glennon's fingernails, and it was a match.
It was a match.
It was the same guy. Okay, so they're like, all right.
So he's real weirdos out there on the loop.
He definitely takes the cake as a real weirdo. Oh. And you got to think, when he broke into that house.
In a 90 and nobody thought that was weird?
They did think it was weird. I guess they kept it.
I guess they had it in the middle of the night. No, I was like.
For longer than 10 years.
Is that they a kept man it. Going in the window in a 90?
So that person survived.
He left
right?
his house in a 90?
Yeah, I guess so.
And drove across
the town. So they knew he couldn't have lived too far, or I guess if he drove, but they definitely knew he was like...
I hope he didn't walk around town.
They knew these things had been happening for years, for decades. Little things. I mean, they weren't all, you know,
it wasn't
constant.
Like murder.
Those three were happened very close together.
Right.
Okay, within 15 months. But they know this... They profile that he's got to live in the area. Mm-hmm. So they start looking at these other crimes. They said it was an investigator in 2016 that actually cracked this case.
Okay.
He actually... realized that is the same person because of DNA. And that person that when he broke into her house, she survived.
Yeah.
And then the girl that he raped, the 17-year-old in 1995, she survived.
Mm-hmm.
So they've seen this perpetrator. I think he did try to cover her face when the 17-year-old.
Yeah.
They've got some ideas, even if I don't think they completely saw him and kept pointing him out. I mean, it was dark when he broke into the girl's room. So they know, all right? They know this is the same guy. They've got that match in 2016.
Right.
So he's just lived a normal life all these years.
Normal is a stretch. He's lived his life for sure.
He has lived his life.
Yeah, right.
They look more in depth into some other similar cases that happened near that area that seemed to be sexually motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some fingerprints from that 1988 break-in along with the DNA.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, they had fingerprints. And they put it in the national database, and they got a hit. Is that for fingerprints, though? Because CODIS is the DNA one.
No, I thought CODIS ran all of it. I don't know.
Well, they put it in.
I just want to sound smart.
Put it in for the they put it in for the fingerprint database.
I don't know.
And they got a match. And Bradley Edwards, they didn't have Bradley's DNA. All they had was his fingerprint match, okay?
Oh, so his fingerprints were in the database, but not his DNA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. An undercover investigator was very smart, and he followed him and waited until he discarded a Sprite bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And they took it and got the DNA evidence off that, and they connected it. I mean, they put it up against these other, the murder for sure, what was underneath the fingernail, and it was a match. So they... Wouldn't you know, this in 2016, 51-year-old Bradley Edward was finally arrested for the murders of the two women and the rape and the assault of the other.
Okay.
So Edwards had been twice married with a stepdaughter. Like I said, he had kept this regular job, same job for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, he was actually charged with Sarah's murder. So in 2018, Sarah's who the story started. And the Claremont killings... her case started it all.
The whole thing.
The disappearance. Yeah.
Which is what ended up solving the two things that happened before she.
Yeah, they were all connected, but this is what happened. He progressed. He started out small.
I'm trying to think what I learned on Criminal Minds, Emma wouldn't know the word, but go ahead.
That's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
But there was also fibers found on the women, the two women that the bodies that they found that had died. This was one of the other things that they linked him. And it was some fibers from the same fibers that were in the model station wagon that Edwards drove. It was his
married in 1988. I'm super concerned about this 90.
Oh,
no, it was his wife's 90.
Yeah, I mean, he probably was. Well, I know he was married a couple times. I think his wife had, divorced him. And they say, the night Sarah went missing, that his wife had told him that, you know, he wanted to come spend Australia Day with her and her family. Mm-hmm. And she rejected him because they were separated. And so they're saying that's why he got mad and looked...
Triggered
and looked for somebody, which sounds pretty plausible.
Yeah.
He's by himself. He goes and... So, obviously, he was married, but separated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 1988, I'm not sure, but this was in 1997.
Yeah.
Or, no, my bad. 1996. Yeah. All within 15 months, all those three women disappeared. That station wagon was also his work car that he drove all that time. Mm-hmm. That was also spotted in the area where Sarah went missing. They thought, you know, for sure, and that's definitely why probably later they put that together and they decided to charge him with her murder as well, even though her body, they did not have her body. So he pleaded guilty to the assaults and rapes, but not the killings. He had to go to trial. So he went on trial for all the murders, and he was found guilty of the girls that the bodies were found, but not Sarah's, which was pretty disappointing. But with no body, they felt like there was not enough evidence to charge him for that.
Enough. I mean,
he got life in prison, but
they could just throw him in and get life in prison anyway. They can be like, no, we don't know if he's or not, but what does it matter?
That was the whole, what we talked about a couple episodes ago, no body, no crime. It's just hard. Now I feel like they're doing more with that, which is good, because that's what people think, and they think they can get away with it if they dispose of the body.
And she's never been found.
Never been found. So
that's crazy. Obviously so good with getting rid of her body, but he couldn't manage to do the other two. That's what's so weird. It's like usually you get better at what you do. It's almost like he got worse. Like he abducted her, killed her, and
I think her body's out there. They just nobody's found it. And he didn't tell them where those bodies were. They found them. So
yeah, but they found those two, but not hers. That's weird.
He just hit it really well, I guess. But
I guess so.
The crimes, I mean, like what we talked about a minute ago, they really escalated. They said as a young boy, he stole women's underwear in his neighborhood, and he would wear them.
Whose underwear did he
sell?
What'd you say?
He stole.
Oh, I said he stole it. I was like, whose underwear is he selling?
He stole ladies.
He needed help.
He broke into, like, his neighbor's house and steal ladies' underwear and wear them.
And his mom didn't. She's like,
yeah, I think he was like, they said his son was like 8 years old.
He's so funny.
And then the break-in and the attack in 1988 on May 7th in 1990, get this, at his work, while he was working on shift, he attacked a woman on his work shift while she was working at the hospital. She was a social worker and she was writing a report, and he comes up behind her, grabs her, puts his hand over her mouth and starts to drag her to the bathroom. She breaks free. And what happens? He got a conviction, but he didn't get fired from his job. They kept him. They just said that he had to complete a sex offender program.
Did what?
Yeah, and the lady, when all the Claremont killers, when it all came out and they realized that it was him and, you know, everything, she wrote a book about it. And she was like, if they would have taken this attack more seriously, it could have prevented future attacks.
I mean, I don't think there's any option to not take that kind of attack seriously.
They didn't even fire him.
That's insane. I mean, I know that firing him would have stopped what he did after that. But, I mean, I feel like maybe his mom being like, oh, I think it's a little odd that you're stealing our neighbor's underwear. Let's get you some help. That might have stopped it.
Well, the sex offender program didn't help either.
Nothing. I mean,
that's not going to help a person. And in 1995, that's when Edwards abducts and rapes a 17-year-old girl. And then sometime between 1995 and 1997, a male driver, this is what who he worked for years, it's called Telstra. I always want to say Tesla, but it says Telstra worker. So a girl had come forward after the Claremont killers. I think it was after, I don't know if it was after he was found, because this is actually, it was during when they couldn't find him, but they, for some reason, couldn't link him to this, okay? She reported that a guy in that worker van, you know, he said he was giving women rides home in the Claremont area and asked her if she needed a ride. And she was like, okay. So she got in the car, which you got to think, and it was sometime between 1995 and 1997. I guess people just took rides from strangers. I don't know. But a little bit more common often. There was taxis, but there wasn't Ubers and Lyfts. And so she got in the car and she said he started to attack her.
Mm-hmm.
And she told him she was a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, and he backed off and let her out. Thought Emma would like that. But I mean, where she was like, so she got away, but like, so they she reported it and said that it was somebody that either worked for Telstra or was pretending to work for them.
Right.
And they said that they were notified, and that if they would have done a background check on this worker, which was him, okay, this was before the murders or sometime around, they could have caught him. They would have realized he had a criminal record of, you know, he had assaulted the lady, because he did
still a conviction.
No, they could have found out that they could have linked him to being the Claremont killer.
Yeah.
Because she's basically saying, look, someone that was either posing as a worker for this company. So they did, like, I think they looked into some of the workers, but they didn't do a background check on all of them, because they would have realized he had done sexually motivated crimes before. He had a record, okay? He stole panties from the neighbors, and he had the record of assaulting the lady.
Bored him.
Yeah.
I thought he sold them.
He had a record from when he attacked the lady at the hospital, but he didn't, like, nobody knew he had raped a 17-year-old yet.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things. He still had a record if they would have done a background check. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, that was looked over and that wasn't, I don't know. They just didn't, they thought nobody fit the profile. They didn't do any background checks. So that was, that's how his killings or his crimes progressed.
I'd like to know what his ex-wives say about him.
I don't, there is a lot of podcasts about it and YouTubes, but I didn't even read any of them. I just did research on with articles and
I'd like reading it. They say he was normal.
Well, I don't think so. They said during the trial that he got mad at, I don't know if this was when he was in jail or if it was like during the trial, he got mad at something. He got triggered and stabbed himself in the ear with a pencil. They said he had like outburst, like fits or whatever. They said he was like staring at some girl. I get, and it was a girl that like fit the profile and he like got in a rage. Had a rage fit.
I wonder if his mom looked like those girls.
I know. I don't know. But it was crazy. I mean, the fact that he got away with this for so long.
Like myth after myth.
Thank goodness they finally called him. Yeah, it did seem like that because 19 years before they ever even... I mean, that's what made me mad.
At work. That makes no sense.
Mm-mm. And that was on record. He got a conviction for that. No, but he didn't get fired. But he got a
record. I mean, you get fired these days for... so much less than trying to rape your coworker.
If you tweet something that isn't politically correct.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you get fired. But to this day, Sarah's body has never been found. But there was a tip in February 2022 where a then, in 1996, horse trainer said the day that Sarah went missing, like the next day, mm-hmm. the day that, you know, that she didn't come home, he saw a man that looked like Edwards coming out of the brush near his stables carrying a shovel. He even saw his car there. And he said he first reported it to the police in 1997. Well, after, you know, he was convicted and everything else, he came out and said, look, I think I saw who was Edwards and coming out of the brush and he had a shovel. And the police said that there's no evidence to validate that information. So
they didn't even go look?
I mean, they just said that there wasn't anything that made them believe that. I don't know what would be the harm to go look. Obviously,
I don't know either. That's weird.
And the other ones were left. And I don't know if they were left just like you said, maybe he thought, I want their bodies to be found. So maybe he buried
maybe
her.
Maybe he did on purpose. And maybe he did.
Well, Sarah was
recognition.
Sarah was obviously his first killing.
Yeah.
Okay. So that we know
of. I think.
So maybe he wanted to bury her because, and then he was like, well, I don't
think he recognizes. Nobody knows I'm doing this.
Well, or he doesn't, he really does want her family. He wanted the other two girls' families to find them. I mean, like he had some kind of remorse.
I don't think so. I know the people listening. I mean, can't see my face, but
no. I mean, he's a sicko that deserves to be in prison for the rest of his life.
He probably put her somewhere where she could be found, but she never was. He probably thought, screw this. I need some notoriety for what I'm doing. Because most people who do that stuff,
that's why. Yeah,
they want.
You're
that.
Probably more right. It wasn't that he wants her family disclosure.
Hell no.
Their family sad pleasure.
Yeah. I don't think. I mean, as much as I'd like to think that serial killers can be concerned about their victims' families, I don't think.
But you know what's odd about it? After those three killings, just think about it. He didn't get caught for 19 years. There wasn't any more things. That's kind of strange.
Did he live there still?
He lived in the area.
So he only killed three people?
Yeah, I mean,
they owned it, meaning like that. But I'm just saying, for that period of time, there's no way.
I know. That's very odd. But it took him 19 years. And they, you know, they said his stepdaughter and his wife, I guess he did, maybe he did have a wife later and a stepdaughter. They said he like volunteered in the community and all this. And I'm like, well, maybe he just thought, I don't know, maybe once he had a child, even though it was a stepdaughter, maybe he thought that he looked at things differently. I have no idea. But why? Because in 19 years, you don't stop. And that's how you end up getting caught. I mean, you eventually get caught. The reason he didn't, maybe it's because he did stop. Maybe that's how he didn't get caught for 19 years.
Like the B2K and all those people, like the Green River Killer, they stopped for a long time and then picked back up.
Okay.
So now I like lulls.
He might have picked back up. Yeah. He was only 51.
Maybe he's getting ready. He's getting ramped up. He's like, damn.
And thank God they found him. And it's just sad for Sarah's family and all the ladies' families. They're devastated. And I mean, I'm sure Sarah's are desperate for closure and to find their child.
Are her parents, I guess her parents are still alive.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's terrible.
I know. And it's just sad because I feel like the other families, at least they found their daughters and they got closure in that way.
He was so worried about the other, if it was because he wanted their families to have closure, then he would have confessed to Sarah and said, yeah, you're right, I did it. Let me give her family closure. So that's probably not what it was about, the other two getting found.
He still didn't say, I want to say I read somewhere where after he was found guilty, he admitted to the other two girls' killings that he was found guilty for. But
he still never admitted to Sarah. And it is weird, though.
There's a podcast, I think, on the Claremont Killer. I read something. I didn't hear the podcast, or a writer or the podcaster was saying, you know, I think he'll never tell the family where she is. Because I think he just, like, doesn't want to admit that he did it. And so...
like, he's embarrassed about it?
I don't know why he would admit the other two and not want... I mean, that's just so...
I don't know.
Silly. And his defense team was given reasons why. I don't know why they work so hard to get you off one when you... They were trying to... They're like, this doesn't mean the crimes were connected because Sarah was never found.
He's in prison for life anyway. Just fess up.
Yeah.
It's not going to get worse.
And give the family
closure. It can't get worse.
Give the family closure.
Yeah. It can't get worse. Just say it.
So if you want to know any more information on this, especially, I mean, it is interesting. The other two girls, I mean, they were just gorgeous and had bright features. The 27-year-old was a lawyer. I mean, it's just, that was the third one. It's just so sad. And he obviously had some kind of sick fetish or some kind of sick anger towards women that look like that particular.
I know. I think I want to go to what his mom looked like.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Like mommy issues.
I didn't do that. Yeah, because you're like, it comes from somewhere. There was like a picture of him in a school and it was 8 years old. And they were like, this is not long after this child will become a monster. Like not long after this picture taken, this 8 year old child will become the monster that Bradley Edwards was. I keep sending us stories.
Yeah.
And even if they're small little stories, and we'll put them on a mini episode that we do eventually. At twoblondesleuths@gmail.com.
Yes.
And thanks for listening.
We're back next week. Oh, don't forget to rate and review.
Yeah, rate and review.
Yeah.
Like our page.
I mean, you can rate it, but don't review it unless it's nice.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks.